This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The extensive security clampdown that followed the attempt to blow up a plane over Detroit on Christmas Day has been eased, but the regulations that take effect today are more strict than the procedures were on Christmas Eve before the failed attack. From now on, passengers flying to the United States from 14 countries will all face extra security before boarding their plane. Those countries include those considered state sponsors of terrorism, Sudan, Syria, Iran, and Cuba, and 10 others described as countries of interest. Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Nigeria, Yemen, Afghanistan, Algeria, Libya, Iraq, and Somalia. And everyone flying to the U.S. from overseas will be subject to increased random screening. The extra security measures include body pat-downs, searches of carry-on bags, scans by explosive detectors, and, in some cases where the machines are available, full-body scans. Critics say the new measures raise concerns about privacy and about civil liberties. Later in the program, on the opinion page this week, an argument for a better way to run the no-fly list. But first, the new security requirements. If you have questions about these new rules, how they'll affect you, give us a call. Does this make you feel safer? Phone number 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. We begin here in Studio 3A with Tom Frank, Homeland Security Reporter for USA Today. Nice to have you on the program today.
Great to be here.
And explain, is that the pretty much the extent of the new rules?
Pretty much. It's one thing that's important to clarify is that when you say people flying to the U.S. from these 14 countries, it's anyone who actually begins their journey in those countries. Very few, if any, of those countries actually have direct flights to the U.S. So what this is really after is someone who, say, starts their flight in Nigeria, goes to Amsterdam, and catches a flight going to Detroit, just to pick a random aviation route. And it's really it will be seen mostly in the European airports, where people from those 14 countries typically transfer onto the major carriers that take them to the U.S.
Across the Atlantic or across the Pacific, however they happen right. to be traveling. And again, this is only for people flying internationally into the United States. This doesn't cover domestic travel?
It doesn't have anything to do with domestic travel. There has been very little change in the actual screening procedures to domestic travel since the Christmas incident. The TSA has done things like put more what they call behavior detection officers who look for suspicious acting passengers and more canine teams. But there's been no real change in the security procedures for domestic passengers.
Well, that we'll get to that question of who gets selected out and why in just a moment. But I wanted to follow up on these rules. Does this count just the citizens of these 14 countries or anybody on any flight originating in any of those countries?
The latter. Anybody on any flight originating in those countries.
Even if you're an American citizen.
That's probably correct. I'm not sure, but I believe that's the way the directive has been written.
I saw it on the website, and that appears to be the way it's written. It's also said that while these sort of extreme measures that we've seen in the past week or so have been eased a little bit, people coming in on international flights can expect many more random searches.
Random searches or searches based on threat information and other intelligence information. But you're right. The big onerous pat-down procedure that had been in place starting December 26, where every single passenger coming to the U.S. was given a full pat-down, that's gone. But the security is going to be tighter for passengers coming to the U.S., even those who are have no problems in their background. The TSA, I think, realizes that this is one of the problems in aviation security, is that the TSA doesn't control the screening outside its borders, mm-hmm. so it has to rely on the airports in overseas countries.
And this is in terms of transatlantic travel, largely from the Netherlands, from Germany, from France, from Britain.
And also from Canada. Actually, some of the worst problems in the last 2 weeks were in Canada because the lines there were just extreme. They actually, I think Air Canada said no carry-on bags whatsoever because they couldn't handle the backup. So, and Canada has more flights than any other country to the U.S.
So in addition to the, you go through the metal detector the first time. So this would either be a pat-down or a search of your luggage or if they have one of these body image scanners, you would go through that?
Right. And if they have a body scanner, you could go through that instead of the metal detector. Of course, if you get a pat-down, that would be in addition to going through the metal detector. And your bag always goes through the X-ray machine, but there could be, as you said, using explosive detection equipment to search for explosives or a good old-fashioned hand search of your bag.
In case they see anything suspicious, or sometimes just at random. And in any case, we now know one of the things, nationality, and if you're on one of these flights originating from one of these 14 countries, you can automatically expect extra measures.
That's right.
Now, what are the other reasons that you might get extra security? You mentioned some. Behavior, if you're looking very nervous?
I don't know if they have the behavior detection in other countries the way they have it in the U.S. The U.S., the TSA has rolled out a very robust program in almost every airport in the country. I've not heard of it happening in overseas airports. But as you say, it could be random. It could be that there is some information that shows up in your background. It could be how you purchase your ticket. I know that's been an issue that has been raised.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question about that. Mm-hmm. If I purchase a ticket, say I buy a one-way ticket from Washington, D.C. to Chicago, I just show the TSA person my boarding pass. He doesn't know it's a one-way ticket.
No, but the airline does. And the airline, which will print out your boarding pass, the airlines right now are doing the background checking. They're the ones checking your names mm-hmm. against terror watch lists, no-fly lists, selectee lists, and also looking at how you purchase the ticket. So the airline might flag you to be secondarily screened.
So there would be a code on my boarding pass that might say, watch out for this person.
Actually, it would say there would be four S's written on it, which is code for watch out for this person.
Person, okay. Yeah. And that would be if I'd paid cash for a one-way ticket.
The rules have been changed a lot since shortly after 9/11. Everyone sort of knew, well, if you bought a one-way ticket, that rule is gone. That no longer gets you considered as a selectee. Paying cash in Europe and in Africa and South America, especially in South America and Africa, that's actually the way most airline tickets are bought because mm-hmm. people don't feel secure putting their credit card information into a website. Not carrying checked luggage, that also does not get you flagged for secondary screening.
We're talking with Tom Frank, a Homeland Security reporter for USA Today. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org if you have questions about these new screening regulations and whether they make you feel safer. Let's begin with Candace. Candace calling us from Wichita.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
I appreciate the topic. It's a really great one. I wanted to make two points. Essentially, I don't feel any safer, nor did I ever really feel a threat of terrorism in the first place. If you consider proportionately what we've experienced terrorism-wise in the United States compared to other places like Great Britain, Indonesia, you know, Japan, for instance, all terrorism does not originate outside of our borders, nor do all attacks, or nor do all things that we do, consider like war, sanctioned acts of violence against other countries, cannot be justified as not terrorism. I think that what this is actually doing would be to contribute more to the attitudes and the climate overseas that, you know, we have this air of superiority, this discrimination tactic primarily against Muslim countries. And it occurs to me that we should be, you know, I don't know what the solution is, but I know that the solution is not to, I know in my heart that the solution would not be to target specifically religious groups or target specifically.
And you feel that's what's being done here?
I feel that's what's being done, and I feel that contributes to the climate of those people feeling discriminated against. Or, you know, what do? We go and we have a sanctioned billion-dollar war against their country where we blow up millions of people or hundreds of thousands of people, civilians, and the quote-unquote enemy. And we don't consider that terrorism. When they commit an act across the seas to the United States, we make weeks long of media coverage.
So it's okay for them to blow up airliners if it's retaliation?
I don't think it's okay, but I think that what we do in reaction to those acts actually contributes to the climate of them believing that they are being effective as terrorists. I think that we have to reexamine what we do in reaction to the terrorist attacks that occur. Because if you take a look at the places where they have more consistent terrorism, in the past few years, the focus has gone more towards the United States because those places don't sensationalize every single terrorist act that occurs. I mean, we have had terrorist acts in this country that have occurred, that have started with American citizens and occurred here, and, you know, we didn't change anything about our security policies based off of that for American citizens because...
They didn't happen on airlines.
I'm sorry?
They didn't happen on airlines.
Well, yeah, on airlines.
Yeah, but we're talking about airline screening, and that's what's changed because there was an attack on an airliner.
Okay, I do agree with you. Airline screenings must change as a blanket approach, but we can't focus on one religious entity that...
I got you, Candace. Okay.
Group.
Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's see. We go quickly to Eliud. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
In Folcroft in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I have a question, and specifically about Cuba. I feel that it was selected because of political reasons, not entirely, and maybe someone can explain to me. Maybe
Well, Tom, Cuba is on the list. The State Department keeps a list of states that are officially decreed to sponsor terrorism.
Right.
Cuba is on that list, and therefore automatically Cubans would be on this list.
That
obviously,
right.
There's not a lot of people flying to this country from Cuba anyway.
That's right.
Right, and I tend to disagree why it's on that list, but I also I think we should find reasons behind these attempts. And a lot of these countries, as you well know, have corruption, poverty, environmental crimes being perpetrated by corporations. And yet we wonder why this thing is aimed or directed at us. And we should look at the reasons.
Okay, Tom. Eliud, thank you very much for the call. Stay with us. We're talking about the 14 countries that have been placed citizens of those 14 countries have been selected for more intense screening. Most are countries which are majority Muslim. Is this profiling? More on that when we come back in just a minute. More of your calls as well. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After a failed bombing attempt on Christmas Day, new stricter security measures are in effect today. Do they make you feel more secure? Passengers holding passports from 14 nations considered either state sponsors of terrorism or countries of interest, or taking flights that originate or pass through any of those countries will be required to undergo full-body pat-downs and face extra screening of their carry-on bags before they can board flights to the U.S. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Most of these 14 countries are majority Muslim nations. That concerns Ibrahim Hooper. He's the National Communications Director for CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations. And he joins us now on the line from his office here in Washington. Nice to have you back in the program.
Thanks for having me.
And is this profiling, do you think?
Yeah, I think definitely it's profiling. Whenever you single people out based on their national origin and inevitably their faith, it's profiling. Under these guidelines, almost every American Muslim who travels to see friends and family overseas or goes on pilgrimage to Mecca or Umrah, the lesser pilgrimage, they're all going to be singled out for special scrutiny. And, you know, that's profiling.
One could point out that the most populous Muslim nation, Indonesia, is not on this list, nor is the second most populous, India.
Well, one of the things we see is that, you know, for the American Muslim community, the number of Indonesian people of Indonesian origin is relatively small in our country. But I think you'll see the vast majority of Americans being American Muslims being singled out under this policy.
Well, they're not being singled out. Everybody who's on that flight, whatever their national origin, would be would be patted down, extra security.
Well, but it's going to have a widely disproportionate impact on the American Muslim community because, you know, if you're of Indo-Pakistani descent, you know, you're going to go back to Pakistan every once in a while. You might travel through Dubai if you're going to the Muslim world, even if you're going to Indonesia or Malaysia.
Dubai's not on the list.
Dubai is not on the list?
No.
Well, I mean, you'll be traveling through many parts of the Muslim world that are on the list, and it's just going to have a disproportionate impact.
Is there a cultural element here if full-body scanners come into more wider use and more pat-downs?
Well, I think anybody who goes through a scanner that is a virtual strip search, I think, would have a problem with that. And modesty is a big issue with Muslims. You know, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said that every religion has an intrinsic quality, and the intrinsic quality of Islam is modesty. And I think that's going to be a big problem for many Muslims. It would be a big problem for me to have a virtual strip search of the ability of anyone to manipulate this any way they want and do anything they want with it. There's verbal assurances that nothing will be done with these and they'll be deleted immediately. But, you know, we know what happens with those assurances.
Tom Frank is
just
here.
Just the Homeland Security reporter
for USA Today.
Right, on the body scanners, that at least the way they're used in the U.S., and I assume this will be how they're used overseas, is that anyone who does not want to go through a body scanner can opt out of a body scan. It's never mandatory. If you opt out of a body scan in the U.S., you then do go to a pat-down. Now, whether that's more or less invasive...
In the United States, but from my understanding, that will not be the case overseas, for instance, in the Netherlands.
It may not be the case. In fact, I'm not sure we know. Ibrahim Hooper, at this point, is CARE planning to file a complaint on this?
Well, we're just stating our position that we believe this policy amounts to profiling. We understand that the call for profiling is very strong right now. People want to feel like they're doing something to make themselves safer. And this is one of those feel-good things. Well, if we just, you know, have Muslims go through a separate line...
Again, you're overstating it. It's not Muslims. It's people from 14 countries.
Well, but the real impact is going to be on Muslims. And, you know, while other people may be inconvenienced, the real target, I believe, of this is Muslims. And while this may make people feel safer, it will only serve to alienate and stigmatize Muslims and does little or nothing to improve airline security.
Ibrahim Hooper, thank you very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ibrahim Hooper, National Communications Director for the Council on American-Islamic Relations, with us today on the phone from his office here in Washington. Let's go next to Minu. Minu with us on the line from Cleveland.
Yes.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Am I there?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi.
You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Me and my husband, we are both from India. We look stereotypical Indian, you know, personality.
Mm-hmm.
My husband travels all over the world, and he gets, you know, pulled over many times, 60% or 70% of his travel, and he has no problem with it. He keeps his cool. I strongly believe that if I was in India and if a white or a black person would do something like that, they would be pulling them out too. So I have no problem them profiling us and pulling us out. It's an extra measure they have to take. It's inconvenient, but it needs to be done. Why, you know, people looking like us are doing these kinds of things. Why are we complaining? I don't understand. I don't see a point.
Mina, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Here's an email that we have, this from Danielle. The new TSA rules do not make me feel safer at all. Why, instead of singling out certain countries, are we not encouraging all countries to step up screening processes? As we know, the shoe bomber and the terrorists of 9/11 did not fly in from any of these countries. Rather, they flew in from the UK and from Germany. Why aren't these countries, the UK, Germany, other European countries, being held accountable? This also raises concerns for me, as my husband is Algerian, and we will now be subject to prejudices for others' mistakes. I do not have a problem with extra security, but it should be for everyone. Singling out certain countries is not enough and makes for more problems than solutions. And Tom Frank, she does have a point.
Well, she does, but one answer to that is that a lot of these countries actually are going to start doing more. In fact, as we speak right now, two top Homeland Security Department officials are meeting with aviation officials in Amsterdam, in the Schiphol Airport, to review their security procedures. This is a one-week worldwide tour, and basically these two Homeland Security officials are going to countries all over the world to talk about their aviation screening and pretty much encourage them to step it up. And I think Secretary Napolitano is going to be following up with some high-level meetings toward this end in a few weeks.
Let's go next to Vincent. Vincent with us from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yeah. My question, I'm in Nigeria, living in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
and I go home every now and then. And I know before you bought a plane from Nigeria, you go through, they basically, strip you naked there. So for this, Nigeria is 150 million people. For this young kid who did not even live in Nigeria, to make this mess and everybody else start going through this, I don't think it's fair.
He did fly from Nigeria, though.
He went into Nigeria on the 24th.
Yes, and then flew
from wherever he came. He came into Nigeria on the 24th and turned around and left Nigeria
with a bomb.
He turned around and left Nigeria then the next day. So for me to be going through, going through that thing because of him, I don't think that's fair. I think that's profiling. The bulk of Al-Qaeda people are Saudi Arabia. I don't see Saudi Arabia on that list.
Saudi Arabia is on the list.
Richard Reid was from France. I don't see France on that list.
France is not on the list.
Okay, so, this kid, that's just one boy. One boy, Richard Reid is a French man. I don't see France on that list. Just this kid, and Nigeria has to become a country that sponsors terrorism. That's not fair.
It's not described as a sponsor of terrorism. It's described as a country of interest. But I get your point that you feel it's not fair. Thanks very much for the call, Vincent. Appreciate it. Joining us now from his office here in Washington is Clark Kent Irvin, a former Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security, now directs the Homeland Security Program at the Aspen Institute. Nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you very much, Neil.
And do these new security measures make sense to you?
They make perfect sense. I think they really are a step in the right direction. It seems that they were very well thought out. I've been listening to the discussion, and it seems to me that the obvious complaint about such measures, namely that they discriminate against travelers from a particular country, has been addressed by the fact that, yes, there will be 100% additional screening of passengers with passports from certain countries that are known to have longstanding ties to terrorism and people who transit through those countries, even if they don't have passports from those countries. But it'll also be randomly extended to passengers from every other country, including the United States. And so that recognizes that terrorists can come from everywhere. It also recognizes the obvious that, unfortunately, these particular countries, these 14, have been known, as I say, to have particular terrorism ties.
Yet, as Ibrahim Pooper pointed out to us, the impact, certainly in terms of American citizens, will be on Muslims.
Well, it will be on – certainly the Muslim community will be affected by this, but it also will be on those who come from those countries, whether they're Muslim or not. And it will also affect the blue-haired, blue-eyed grandmother from Dubuque who happens to transit through one of those countries. And also, if she transits through Britain, she will be randomly subjected – she might be randomly subjected to this scrutiny as well. In this post-9/11 environment, unfortunately, we can't have perfect liberty. And we can't have perfect security. We've got to strike a balance. And it seems to me that TSA has struck the right balance here.
And let's see if we can go next to another caller. Let's go to Hugh. Hugh with us from Oakland.
So I'm concerned because I'm concerned it would be easy for somebody to get around these measures. All they would have to do is board a plane in another third world country where controls are lax. And then I'm confused. It seems conflicting whether when they get to Amsterdam, they're not going through the TSA and check-in there. They're transferring. Are they going to be full-body scanned at the individual gates, of which there are many?
Mm-hmm.
And is it only going to be those people, who came from the said countries, not anybody else?
Tom Frank, can you help us?
Just one note on you mentioned third world countries with lax security. The TSA audits every single airport in the world that has flights into the U.S. to see whether the security meets international standards. If it doesn't, the TSA will put out a notice saying we cannot vouch for the quality of this screening, and they will require the airlines that have the flights from that country to the U.S. to put notices on the tickets they issue saying the same thing. We cannot vouch for the safety or the security of this, and they will require signs in airports. So there is a minimum level of standard that the airports that have direct flights to the U.S. Meet. The international standard is not as high as what the TSA standard would be for airports in the U.S., and I think part of what the TSA is going to try to do is get the countries to move up from the international standard to the TSA standard.
But I think the broader point here, Clark Kent Irvin, is the caller's argument that instead of getting on the plane in Nigeria, getting on the plane in Ghana, instead of getting on the plane in Lebanon, which is on the list, getting on the plane in Jordan, which is not.
Well, that's right. And that's why, as I say, it's important that TSA coupled this security measure for these 14 countries with random application of these enhanced procedures to every other country in the world. That's not 100%, of course, but you are likelier now than you were before if you go to another country and you are bound to the United States to be subjected to additional scrutiny. To me, that's prudent. We can't do this 100% of the time to 100% of the countries in the world. That would slow aviation travel to a screeching halt at a time when it's already been slowed by a number of things. But, as I say, because these particular countries have been known to have ties to terrorism for a long time, they are rightly subjected to additional scrutiny. And to catch that person who might try to game the system by entering the United States from another country, there's random screening, so there's an increased chance that that person might be screened. And further, of course, if there is particular intelligence against a particular person, irrespective of what passport that person holds or what his or her itinerary is, likewise, that person is going to be subjected to enhanced screening.
Hugh, thanks very much for the call. We're talking with Clark Kent Irvin, the former Inspector General of the Homeland Security Department back in the Bush administration. Tom Frank is also with us, the Homeland Security reporter for USA Today. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email message from John in Reno. I'm flying to India in 2 weeks. My original plan was to have carry-on baggage only. With these new security procedures, is this still possible? India not on this list, Tom Frank. I don't see that this would change anything.
It wouldn't change.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Let's see if we can get next to Aaron. Aaron calling us from North Syracuse in New York.
Yes, I have a comment. Your question was this profiling? And I would have to say that I believe it is. It certainly appears to be profiling. But my question would be, as long as we're profiling in a scientific way, that's really proved to be the, you know, the, we are weeding out the right people to scrutinize, what's wrong with profiling? For instance, it happens in, if you know the particular animal is aggressive, for instance, you tend to take more precautions when you're around that
particular animal. I think we want to be cautious about analogies to animals here.
And right, that's a, it's a terrible analogy. It's
okay.
Just the one that I could come up with.
But, let me ask Clark Kent Irvin, is this in fact profiling?
Well, I think that's a good question, and I could certainly see one taking the position that it's profiling. It's, if it's profiling at all, it's profiling of a geographic nature as opposed to of a racial or ethnic nature. The fact of the matter is that these countries, as I've said many times before, and as we all know, have been tied to terrorism. That's why they're on this list. That's why people who hold those passports, irrespective of those persons' race or ethnicity, are subjected to additional scrutiny. But that's different, it seems to me, from the most, at least in my mind, objectionable kind of profiling that's based on race or ethnicity, on principle, point one, and two, in terms of practice. Al-Qaeda knows that whether we admit it or not, we have a racial ethnic stereotype in our minds of an Arab male. And the fact of the matter is that Al-Qaeda, knowing that, is deliberately recruiting people who don't fit that profile. For example, Jose Padilla, for example, the terrorist from Chicago, an Hispanic male. Adam Gandan, a spokesman for Al-Qaeda, is a Caucasian American who actually had a Jewish background. So terrorists come in all shapes and sizes. But they tend to come from particular countries, and that's why this measure has been implemented.
And this most recent incident involved a Nigerian who's alleged to have carried out this failed attack over Detroit. And in fact, there's been mention made of the shoe bomber, Richard Reid, who's clearly not of Arab descent.
Exactly.
All right. Aaron, thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we can go next to, here's an email. This, and I think we've gotten a lot in this line, this from Chris. Please give us a legitimate reason why Cuba is listed as a state sponsor of terrorism. Do you want to tackle that, Clark Kent Irvin?
Well, certainly, needless to say, the United States has had a long and antagonistic relationship with the Cuban, with the Castro government in Cuba, and this is a legacy of that. There is no question but that Cuba in the past has been a sponsor of state terrorism, and I would argue that to some extent that continues to this day. It certainly has not been the kind of terrorism that we're talking about here, terrorism that appears to be carried out in the name of Islam, but it's terrorism nevertheless. And so I think it's primarily because of the historical antagonism between the United States and Cuba that Cuba is on this list.
Tom Frank, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Tom Frank, Homeland Security reporter for USA Today. We're going to stay on the line with Clark Kent Irvin, who's director of the Homeland Security Program at the Aspen Institute. We're also going to have the opinion page when we come back and hear an argument for a better way to run the no-fly list. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In just a moment, the opinion page. Right now, we're finishing up our conversation on new security screening measures at airports around the world. Incoming passengers into the United States from 14 countries will all face additional screening measures. That includes U.S. citizens or European citizens or citizens of those 14 countries. They include the four countries on the list of state sponsors of terrorism and 10 countries of interest. Those 10 countries of interest are all majority Muslim. Our guest is Clark Kent Irvin, director of the Homeland Security Program at the Aspen Institute, former Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security back in the Bush administration. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Corey. Corey with us from Boise.
Excuse me?
You're on the air, Corey. Corey, go ahead.
Yes. What I really wanted to talk about really quick was just this sense of entitlement that we feel we have the right to travel all over the world unobstructed, no matter what. Now, as a U.S. citizen, I have the right to travel freely within the borders of my country, unobstructed. But when I choose to go outside the United States, I am subject to whatever protocols are set up by any governments.
Including your own.
If I'm traveling through these said countries, even as a tourist, then I must be aware of, hey, this is the rules of the road. I am going to be subjected to them.
So you don't feel like you're giving up any civil liberties here?
No, my civil liberties pertain to me and my country. Not pertain to me in Yemen or in any other of the countries that are classified as terrorism.
So you think this is a sensible change of rules?
Well, yes. I think it's been a long time coming, actually.
All right, Corey. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go next to Beth, and Beth is with us from Aurora in Colorado.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
My issue is that I really don't mind the extra screenings. What bothers me is that it seems to be somewhat arbitrary and reactionary, depending on what happens. Like, the shoe bomber comes, and all of a sudden we have to take our shoes off. I have beaten the system myself, and, you know, I'm a law-abiding citizen. But I wanted to take along some of my favorite bath product, and so I just switched bottles.
So it wouldn't be seen as a liquid, so you could take more than 3 ounces?
Well, just so that I could take 3 ounces of my favorite product, I just switched it and put it in a labeled bottle, but it wasn't what it actually was.
I think probably the cell for you in Leavenworth is occupied by somebody else now.
Dang it. But I mean, my husband, a week after 9/11, accidentally left his pocket knife in, and it was a 6-inch pocket knife, mm-hmm. and he didn't get stopped through security. I mean, get bomb-sniffing dogs, get some training, but it gives us a false sense of security by taking off our shoes or going, and I don't mind doing the X-ray screening either.
Mm-hmm.
Take pictures of me. I'm, you know, an overweight woman. If you're into that, you can look.
Okay.
But, you know, that doesn't bother me. What bothers me is all these little itty-bitty things that, I mean, I'm not a terrorist, and I could figure out how to get away with it.
Okay, Beth, thanks very much for the call. And I hope you enjoy your bath product.
Definitely.
Bye-bye. And a lot of Clark Kent Irvin, a lot of people have pointed this out, that a lot of this is theatrics.
Well, that's right. Some of it is. actually, taking off your shoes, I would not say, is an example of theatrics. That's really the only thing right now that we have to prevent us from another Richard Reed shoe bomber. If we had more sophisticated technology, we wouldn't have to do that. But the example she gave of the lotion is a very good one. So her general point, I think, is quite right. Her other general point, that we, the government, TSA in particular, tends to be reactive rather than proactive, likewise, is exactly right and is spot on. And that's what we need to change. We always fight the last war. We're going to make double sure that this particular method of getting onto an airplane can no longer be replicated. But what about other ways in which terrorists can get onto airplanes? We've got to start thinking ahead of the curve rather than always behind it.
And that's always a difficulty. And also we have to sensibly pay attention when a 6-inch pocket knife goes through the metal detector and we just ignore it.
Indeed so.
All right, and that's happened too often in any kinds of tests. As former Inspector General, you know that better than I do.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Clark Kent Irvin joined us on the phone from his office here in Washington, D.C., where he is Director of the Homeland Security Program at the Aspen Institute.